Welcome to sermon audio from Grace Hill Church in Pittsboro, North Carolina. I'm Lee Callicutt, pastor for preaching and teaching at Grace Hill. Grace Hill Church exists to glorify God by being a community on mission transformed by the gospel. For more information about Grace Hill, visit us at gracehillchatham.com.
The words of the preacher, the son of David, king in Jerusalem. Vanity of vanities, says the preacher. Vanity of vanities. All is vanity. What does man gain by all the toil at which he toils under the sun? A generation goes and a generation comes, but the earth remains forever. The sun rises and the sun goes down and hastens to the place where it rises. The wind blows to the south and goes around to the north. And around goes the wind. And on its circuits the wind returns. All streams run to the sea. But the sea is not full. To the place where the streams flow, there they flow again. All things are full of weariness. A man cannot utter it. The eye is not satisfied with seeing, nor the ear filled with hearing. What has been is what will be. And what has been done is what will be done. And there is nothing new under the sun. Is there a thing of which it is said, "See, this is new"? It has been already in the ages before us. There is no remembrance of former things, nor will there be any remembrance of later things yet to be among those who come after. Like all wisdom literature, like Ecclesiastes, Psalms, and Proverbs, the authors of those wisdom literature books, they seek to impart knowledge to dispense truth and to apply the knowledge and truth to God's people. That is wisdom, to apply the truth of God to the people of God. And that is actually the stated purpose of the book of Ecclesiastes. If you go to Ecclesiastes 12, it actually states the purpose. It says that the preacher taught the people knowledge, weighing and studying and arranging many proverbs with great care. That the preacher sought to find words of delight, and uprightly he wrote the words of truth. And that is the stated purpose of Ecclesiastes, is that we would hear the words of truth, and the words of truth would be our delight, our consolation, and our joy. See, the book of Ecclesiastes is all about perspective. It's all about how we view our lives and how we view the world, our meaning, our purpose, our reality, and the inevitable results that if we try to live this life for the things of this world, that we will never find true, genuine, ultimate happiness and joy in this world. Ecclesiastes spells out for us that worldly pleasure and worldly endeavor will never give us a sense of meaning. The book of Ecclesiastes acknowledges the emptiness, the futility, the sometimes seemingly meaninglessness of this world. See, the book of Ecclesiastes acknowledges the pain, the hardship, the questions, the confusion, the upside downness sometimes that this world that we live in appears to be. But yet, Ecclesiastes, without shying away from that truth and those hardships and those realities, it does teach us how to live this life in this world. But not only how to live it and endure it, but to live it to its fullest. And he'll do so by answering some really hard questions. Answering truth. He even here in the passage doesn't really warm us up to the reality of the vanity and futility of life. The preacher, the author, is raw. He's real. He's nitty gritty. And he answers some of life's biggest questions. And yet, he also leaves some questions unanswered. He doesn't dismiss our questions by saying, "Oh, it's not important. We have heaven." He doesn't spiritualize it to just say, "Hey, just have enough faith. But he actually addresses and does not shy away from life's pains and questions, uncertainty, injustice, and confusion. He hits life and confronts life and the realities of it with raw honesty, helping us to navigate this world, even when questions are unanswered and when our world seems upside down and confusing, to help us live, navigate, and live life to the fullest. So who is this one that wrote this wisdom and this truth and this reality? Look at verse 1 with me. Verse 1 says, this is the words of the preacher. So it is a preacher that's writing this. The book Ecclesiastes, this word preacher that is translated in our English Bibles, is actually the Hebrew word koheleth. And then from the Hebrew word koheleth comes a Greek translation, ecclesia, which is also referencing a gathering, a congregation, an assembly. And then you see where we get the English title for Ecclesiastes. It's coming from the Greek word ekklesia. And so because koheleth, the preacher, the person who stands and preaches and dispenses wisdom to a congregation, koheleth, ecclesia, Ecclesiastes. So we get this title from this very word, the preacher. So the person writing this book is one who has wisdom, who teaches, and who stands in front of people and teaches. One who conveys wisdom to the assembly. It would seem that this is not his name, but it would seem that it is actually a title. A title of the one. We see that through the book of Ecclesiastes, through the definite articles, the preacher, the teacher, the wise one, the sage. And so then we must ask the question, okay, this preacher wrote this, koheleth, and you may actually hear me referencing the preacher as koheleth, but who is koheleth? Who is the preacher that wrote the book of Ecclesiastes? Well, you look at verse 1 continuing, he is the son of David, king in Jerusalem. So the book of Ecclesiastes is this man who is son of David, who reigned as king in Jerusalem. In fact, verse 12 says, I, the preacher, have been king over Jerusalem. Now, the Ecclesiastes never explicitly states who its author is, but it is implicit that the author of this book is Solomon himself. Now, so that would be where I land. That is my conclusion, is that the author of Ecclesiastes, which is the traditional understanding of authorship, is Solomon. So I hold to Solomon authorship, and throughout our study and throughout our verse-by-verse series through Ecclesiastes, you may hear me call him the author of Ecclesiastes, the preacher, Koheleth, or Solomon, but we'll use all those interchangeably. But knowing that it's Solomon and believing that it's Solomon actually helps us frame the book of Ecclesiastes with some understanding. Because you got to think, Solomon had everything this world had to offer. He had everything that we could dream of. And yet we see, and this is broad consensus between conservative and liberal scholars alike. And by the way, even some conservative scholars deny that Solomon was the author of this book, but it's competently defended that Solomon is the author. But the consensus among scholars, no matter who they believe wrote this book, is that it's a man later in his life who has lived life and sort of reflecting back on his life, the things he did, the things he had, and now he's looking at it, meditating on it, reflecting it, pondering his life, and writing this passage. But believing it's Solomon, as I do, and believing it was Solomon at the end of his life, it helps us frame the book to understand that this man who had everything, what does he say about life from a man who had everything? He says, I had everything, and yet all this life is nothing but vanity. It's empty. It's futile. Now, some also argue that Ecclesiastes is sort of Solomon's book of repentance, but for the way he lived his life, because he had the money, he had the women, but that's only conjecture to come to that conclusion. But what we do know for sure is that I believe it is Solomon at the end of his life, reflecting back on his life, imparting wisdom to the generations that would come. And so it is Solomon who speaks with authority. And as a wise man, he is Koheleth. He is the preacher of Ecclesiastes. And he reflects back throughout this book as an older man who has lived a full life, now considering life's meaning and purpose. But the book does not just reflect on the experiences of its author, but a broader reflection on, for me and you, on life's ultimate meaning and purpose. And so Solomon, the words of the preacher, the son of David, king of Jerusalem, now introduces the motto, the theme, the purpose, his thesis statement for the book of Ecclesiastes in verse 2. And this is what he hits us with right out of the gate. Vanity of vanities, the preacher said. Vanity of vanities. All is vanity. And so he says, vanity of vanities in a superlative way to emphasize, to highlight that it's not just some vanity, but it's vanity of vanities. It's like saying great of the greatest. This is as vain as it possibly gets. And he repeats it, vanity of vanities, vanity of vanities. And then he includes an all-comprehensive statement in case you didn't quite understand what he was saying. All is vanity. Not just some of this life, not just part of this life, not just the bad parts of life, all of life is vanity. This comprehensive statement that life is full of vanity. But what does vanity mean? That actually comes from a word called havel. Now you'll also, so we don't take the rough edges away from the word, you'll sometimes hear me just call it havel. But havel means vanity. It's broader than just vanity though. And it encompasses this idea of vapor or breath, much like the book of James, that our life is but a mist. That is what havel is, the havel of havels. It's like the dandelion that's cast into the wind. It's like the bubble that you blow here and then gone and popped. That's what he says life is like. It's fleeting. It's a mist. It's a vapor. It's just like a bubble you blow. You're here today and gone tomorrow. But there, the havel is a multifaceted meaning. And we have to, early on, we have to understand exactly what havel means for us to understand Ecclesiastes as a whole. So havel is not just some fixed, standardized, one-to-one meaning that can just be reduced down to a single English word. It would actually not help us capture its depth and meaning. But throughout Ecclesiastes, he's using the word havel in all sorts of ways to provide various shades and nuances depending on the context. It's used as, havel's used for concepts such as meaningless, emptiness, futility, transience, vapor, dissatisfaction, and even absurdity. One commentator that I read this week, he says this about havel, and I think this captures it. He said, havel describes the enigmatic situations and conveys the pain of faith grappling with unanswered and unanswerable questions. That's havel. And so now, Solomon says this life is vanity of vanities, vapor of vapor, meaningless of meaninglessness, futility of futilities. And then verse 3, after he introduces the theme and the motto, he asks us a question then. In light of all of life being vain, verse 3, what does man gain by all the toil? That's the motto, followed the motto in verse 2, followed by this question. What advantage, what profit, what benefit is all our labor? That if all of life is vanity, what's the use? What's the purpose? At the core, verse 3 is already asking us and addressing what is the meaning and purpose of what life? He's getting into the monotony of everyday life. He said, what's the advantage? What's the benefit of all my toil? What's my life about? And you think about that. What is the point? We work. We go to work every Monday morning. You wake up. You do the same thing. You wake up, take a shower, drink your coffee, go to work, clock in, have lunch, clock out, come home, sleep, and do it again the next day, and then do it again the next day. And you do it again for, like you have for the past 6 months, for the past decade, for the last 30 years. And what's the point? What's the toil for? What's the use? If all is vain, why do we do that? And then in verse 3, he continues, at which he toils under the sun. So he says, what does it gain by all the toil at which he toils under the sun? Now, under the sun is giving us an understanding to what is the vanity of life. It qualifies what he is talking about as vanity. And we have to know that under the sun is used 28 times throughout the book of Ecclesiastes. And what it describes for us is the, from a human perspective, just the normal, everyday events of life. The day in, day out grind of life. The monotony of life. When people ask me, what you doing? How you doing? I said, just grinding. Or that's what this is capturing. We're grinding away. We're under the sun. And under the sun means everyone. Every one of us live under the sun. We live under the sun, which this life under the sun is all vanity. It's just describing for us the normal day in, day out grind of life. And the havel that's under the sun is a reality of existence for believer and unbeliever alike. And that's the challenge for us, is finding meaning and purpose as we live life under the sun, which is full of vanity. See, sometimes Ecclesiastes is interpreted and presented in, I think, a wrong way. It creates a dichotomy that you have life with God and life without God. And I don't think this is the proper way to understand it, by the way. It says the life with God and life without God. So you see my interpretive lens coming through as we go through the study. And people say, okay, you got life with God. And life with God means you're going to have all your questions answered. You're going to have purpose and meaning. And then life without God is, well, that's where you have questions that aren't answered and you don't really have meaning and purpose. And yes, ultimate meaning. Yes, we know that's life with God. But just because of that, and it's essential that we avoid this common misunderstanding that havel only applies to life apart from God. See, it's not that Ecclesiastes, life without God, empty and vain, life with God, full of meaning. No, on the contrary, havel, vanity, is the unavoidable aspect of existence controlled and ordained by God himself. So if you think life with God is always going to bring understanding to every event and circumstance in your life, it's going to drive you to despair. See, without God, life has no, yes, ultimately, without God, life has no ultimate meaning or purpose. Yet, even with God, life's mysteries and injustices remain part of the human experience. Even as a believer and follower of Jesus Christ, you can have questions that remain unanswered. Why did this happen? Why did that happen? Why did I lose this person? Why did I lose this or that? And we just don't get those answers. And we come to the conclusion that the preacher comes to that, well, because all of life is vanity. And I have to live under the sun, whether believer or unbeliever. See, it's actually the opposite. It's not saying life with God and life without God and creating this dichotomy. It's actually even life with God. We experience life with God and it's still futility, vapor, and a transient nature of life. Havel is a reality experienced by both believer and unbeliever. This is what runs through the course of the word havel, is it reflects the universal reality of living in a fallen world. See, Ecclesiastes teaches us that part of the curse and condition of living in a fallen world is the futility and vanity of life. And enigmatic, mysterious as life can be, we also understand that God's control over the mysteriousness of life, it provides a framework, yes, for ultimate meaning, but even individual events can remain baffling to us. See, faith in God's sovereignty and faith in God's providence, the foundation for trust in Him, there is ultimate purpose, yes, but it does not eliminate the experience of wrestling with life's inevitable hardships, confusion, and vanity. So Ecclesiastes is actually going to drive us to grapple with life's fleeting nature in the midst of havel. So now the question comes back to verse 3. Why am I here? What's my purpose? What gain do I have with all my toil? Because at the end of the day, either when I retire or when I die, what gain do I have for all my hands, for all my hours, for all my time spent, for my 401k matching, for all the toys, for all the money, for all the vacation homes? What do I have when I die? What good is all the work? What good is all my toil? Is there any satisfaction and meaning that can be found? Or do I just eat, drink, and be merry? Or do I just go into despair? And by the way, that's the two ditches we must avoid. When we think about the vanity of life, there's two ends of the spectrum that we must avoid. One of them is just becoming a hedonist. And I'll just eat, drink, be merry, have sex with who I want to have sex with and get high and just indulge in my sin. Or I'll just go home and kill myself because nothing matters. And those are two ditches we must avoid. But Ecclesiastes is going to give us the framework to understand how to live life and understand, like, what is the gain of all my toil? And he's going to answer that at the end of chapter 2. But now, in this passage, what's emphasized is that everything under the sun is fleeting and transient. And the truth is, for the first question that he asks, where does all our work get us? Nowhere. Because the reality of under the sun is stark. No one truly gains because everyone ends up with the same thing they started with. Nothing. You come into the world with nothing and you go out of the world with nothing. So what gain is it? As the old saying goes, hearses don't pull U-Hauls. There's no trailers hauling possessions to heaven for you. We come in empty-handed and we go out empty-handed. So what's the use? One of life's biggest questions, is it not? What's the point of all of this? Well, then in verse 4, he keeps digging a little more. In verse 4, he says, well, a generation goes and a generation comes, but the earth remains forever. The world, he says in verse 4, the world just keeps spinning. A generation comes and a generation goes. People come, people go, and the world still spins. Life continues, and life continues unfazed by your arrival and unfazed by your departure. Think about what verse 4 is saying and let it settle in for a moment. This is what verse 4 is saying. Life is hard and then you die. That's what it's saying. Life is hard, we fall apart, and then we die. Generation comes and a generation goes. And then he illustrates this with three illustrations from nature in verses 5 through 7. So look at verses 5 through 7. He says, the sun rises and the sun goes down and hastens to the place where it goes. So it's like the sun just does what the sun always does. Regardless, generations come, generations go. And guess what? The sun still rises. It comes up, it goes down, it kind of tucks away for a little bit, and it's going to come right back up. Then in verse 6, the wind blows to the south, it blows to the north, it goes around and around, and on its circuits it returns. We've seen the wind blow yesterday, and it'll be no different today, it'll be no different tomorrow, it'll be no different the next year. All streams run to the sea, but the sea is not full. They go back to the place where the stream flows, and there they flow again. The rivers and the sources are not full, and the rivers go back and they keep circling. It's an endless cycle. When Hall River's low, guess what? Hall River's going to fill back up. That's the way it's always been. Havel, endless activity. Sun rises, sun falls, wind blows, wind stops. Rivers rise, rivers sink. But Solomon isn't just describing nature for us. He's pointing to life itself, the monotony of life, the patterned human existence, the unchanging rhythm of nature. It's just we see it over and over. It's the same thing over and over. As he says later, there's nothing new under the sun. We have seasons. We have cycles. Every fall, the leaves are going to fall. Every winter, we're going to say it's cold. Every spring, the flowers will bloom. Every summer, we're going to say it's hot. A generation comes and a generation goes, and the sun will rise. When I die, the sun is going to rise the next day, and the world will not stand still for me. The sky will still be blue, and the world's going to keep spinning. And those that I leave behind will have to grapple with the same questions we're grappling with this morning. The earth remains forever. He does not celebrate. The world does not celebrate a man's birth or a man's death. And not only when I die, but when you die. The inevitableness of death. When you die, the next day when they throw dirt on your body and your loved ones mourn and go home, the very next day the sun's going to rise. The sky's going to be blue. The wind's going to blow. People will clock in at work. Babies will be born and more people will die. And the cycle repeats itself. Now this realization may not be thrilling, but it's reality. The world does not hinge on what we do. And Kohelet, Solomon, is drawing our attention to this reality. Life moves on. And then he goes in verse 8. All things are full of weariness. The weariness of life. It just wears us out. Like running on a treadmill. Life is vanity. It's relentless repetition that exhausts us. It's running on the treadmill that never stops and never changes the scenery. That's life. One preacher said this week that the regularity of life has an eroding effect, grinding us down over time. That is the weariness of life. Verse 8, a man cannot utter it. What he means is that no one can even explain the lack of meaninglessness. No one can explain what is meaning. Philosophers, skeptic, hedonists, they come to no satisfying conclusion. The only thing that we know about this life is what the Bible, the Word of God says, and it is all fleeting, and no one can explain it. And then in verse 8, he continues. He says, why? The eye is not satisfied with seeing, nor the ear filled with hearing. No one can speak, he says. No one can speak about the meaningful, the monotony of life. There's no meaning. There's no answer. And he says, even our senses are unsatisfied. The eyes want to see more. Yet we've seen it all. What we've seen yesterday will be what we see tomorrow. What we've seen 10 years ago, we'll see in a decade. What we've seen 50 years ago, we'll see 50 years from now. What we've heard yesterday, we'll hear tomorrow. What we heard a decade ago, we'll hear a decade from now. What we heard 50 years ago, we'll hear 50 years from now. There's nothing new under the sun. That's the weariness of life. And yet, the eye is never satisfied. The ear is never satisfied. But yet, it's the same old story over and over again. The endless repetition leaves us yearning for something new, something more. And yet, it always remains out of our reach. This is why people get excited over new gifts and new toys. People get excited for something new. And yet, shortly after their excitement, they'll be unsatisfied. Think about the gifts you got your children or your grandchildren for the holidays, for Christmas. They're already moved on from those toys. Gifts are exciting for a little bit, but then we lose interest. Because the eye's not satisfied. The ear's not satisfied. It's why we mindlessly scroll on our phones on things like Instagram and TikTok thinking, oh, there's something new. There's something new. And we keep thinking we're seeing something new. And soon enough, you'll be dissatisfied with that. It's also why you see people bouncing from job to job, church to church, spouse to spouse. They ain't satisfied with the monotony of life, and they're trying to figure out something that will bring them some excitement, some satisfaction, and it's found nowhere and under the sun. People try to deal with the vanity of life and the meaningless they feel. This is also why I say, well, maybe if I get high enough, then that will be something I've never felt before. But even that does not satisfy. If I could just feel something different than the monotony and regularity of life, if I could just escape the reality of life, this is where Ecclesiastes tells us all is vanity. And everything is never enough. You could have everything that under the sun offers. And your eye will not be satisfied. And your ear will not be satisfied. Your soul will not be satisfied for anything under the sun. Because all is vanity. And then he goes on in verse 9. What has been is what will be. What has been done is what will be done. There's nothing new under the sun. He's basically portraying the reality of what I think life can feel a lot like when you're doing the dishes. I watch my wife tackle those dishes. Why don't you help her? I do. But watching her day in, day out, I do occasionally help. But the havel of dishes. What has been is what will be. Plates, bowls, spoons, knives in the sink. Washed, dried, put away. And then next day, the same plates, the same spoons, the same bowls, the same knives, washed, put away. Because what has been dirty dishes is what will be more dirty dishes. It's like the laundry too, isn't it? I mean, the repetition, the sameness. You wash, you dry, you sometimes put away. And then the same shirt, the same dirty towel to wash and to dry and to put away again. I mean, moms, wives, isn't that a frustrating task under the sun? Do I really have to fold another sock? And we can act all spiritual if we want to and be like, well, I'm serving my family and I'm working for the Lord. It's my pleasure. But if you're being real sometime, you want to leave the dishes in the sink and say, hey, do we have some money to hire a maid? And here's the reality, is that if you're being real, you can look at laundry or dishes, what has been and what will be, and you've asked yourself, will this ever end? And here under the sun, Ecclesiastes says, no, it don't. A relentless cycle. Nothing new's under the sun. And here's another truth about that is you don't have to be an unbeliever to hate doing laundry. You just got to be human. It's the havel of life, the vanity of day in and day out, the endless repetition. And yet we always quest to try something more fulfilling, and yet it always is going to fall short. Relationships, careers, traveling, money, getting famous, none of it will ever make your life meaningful, purposeful, or exciting. Because everything is never enough. Retirement. If I could just retire. If I could just travel. If I could just have more money. If I could just not feel this way. So does he not resonate with what we wrestle with? But then he goes on. He says, is there in verse 10, is there a thing of which is said, see, this is new? It has been already in the ages before us. See, the more things change, the more things stay the same. Is there anything truly new? And some might argue, yeah, there's the internet, there's the iPhone, there's social media. But if you think in that way, you're not really getting the point he's trying to make. And first off, what do we do with those items anyway? We watch cat videos and rant about politics. Just to numb ourselves and to escape even more. And there's nothing new under the sun. Another example is archaeologists have been digging up pornographic images of Canaanite villages, Canaanite culture for years. And that's all. We're just not drawing porn on the wall anymore. We're looking at it on our phones. See, nothing's new under the sun. The vanity of life. What he's getting at. See, of course there's been new inventions and new innovations. Countless from Solomon's time. But no invention has ever enabled humanity to break out of the cycle of Havel. Something that there's been no innovation that transcends the sense of futility and vanity. There's no invention, no discovery, no innovation where we say, oh, look, finally here's the meaning of life. Why? Because all is vanity. Doesn't matter what you have, how you look, what's in your bank account. Everything is never enough. And so he goes on to verse 11. There's no remembrance of former things, nor will there be any remembrance of later things yet to be among those who come after. So if you're not depressed already, here you go. We'll get really rough here. What he says in verse 11 is no one's going to remember you and no one cares. No one is going to remember your good days. No one's going to remember your bad days. No one's going to remember your achievements, your work. No one's going to remember how many diplomas you had. No one's going to remember how many certificates you got. They probably won't even remember our name. Exciting, right? And here we go, once again, thinking we're popular, we'll make a post, and people like our post. But in the end, no one remembers and no one cares. As the young people say, you're not the main character. And you're not special. Then we think how quickly time passes. The revolutions of life just get shorter and quicker. It's like life's like a roll of toilet paper. As you know, the closer to the end you get, the faster it goes. And that's life. The remembrance of former things, nor there will be remembrance of anything later of the later things. Here's what happens. When I was born, my grandparents watched my parents raise me. Then my parents buried my grandparents. Then we've lived life. I've been married. God has blessed me with 3 children. And now my parents watch me and my wife raise their grandchildren. Then one day I'm going to bury my parents. And then soon, Lord willing, my children will get married. And they'll have children. And my children will bury me. And that's life. And so it goes. And then one day, I'll just be someone's great-great-grandfather that no one remembers. What was his name again? You got a picture of, oh, Leonard? He's half Korean, don't sound like it. Oh, he sure was handsome, though. But, do you see? And they move on. When my great-great-grandkids on his iPad 67 and they try to show him pictures, they're like, I don't care. I don't know him. I don't remember him. And I don't care who he was. I mean, think about it. How many of you know all 8 of your great-grandparents' names? And if you do, you probably got it written down on a sheet of paper somewhere. And then if you know all of them, if you know their names, did you know them? Then, okay, let's say you know that. Do you remember all 16 of your great-great-grandparents' names? Do you know what they look like? Do you know them? You don't. So whether you're wise or foolish, rich or poor, good-looking or not, you're going to be forgotten. And that's how he opens up Ecclesiastes. So now the question is, what's the use? What's the purpose? What are we supposed to do? Life is hard and then you die. The end is the grave. And when you go there, you'll have exactly what you started out with when you came out of the womb. Nothing. And on top of that, no one's going to remember you. A little depressing can be causing a little bit of grief. Especially for men, you think everything I worked for, everything I left, everything I sacrificed means nothing. And this is when we have to study the Bible and look at the Bible within the whole story of what God has done in redemptive history. If we just kind of plucked Ecclesiastes and out without understanding the whole narrative of what God has been doing, then it would leave us in despair. But yet, what we know is when you think about the havel, the vanity of life. Why is that even here? It's here because of the curse that's found in Genesis 3. The fall occurred, and with it, a curse. Thorns and thistles, pain and childbirth, the dealing with the curse, the world subjected to havel. The world subjected to fertility and vanity. And yet, even early on in Genesis, buried and nestled within the curse is the promise of hope of a Redeemer that would come and get rid of the vanity and the havel and the futility of life. So the good news for the depressed people in Ecclesiastes is what Paul writes in Romans 8. He addresses it. He says in Romans 8, verse 20, for the creation was subjected to fertility, not willingly, but because of Him who subjected it. So God subjected this world to fertility. And yet in Romans 8, 20, there's two more words after that. It says, but God subjected this life under the sun in vanity and futility. Why? In hope. In hope of what? That this is not the best there is. This isn't all there is. That for the believer in Jesus Christ, this is the closest to hell you will ever get. And there is hope on the horizon because Jesus Christ came into this world. He, the God-man, subjected Himself to the fertility of this world and the frailties of humanity to live a perfect sinless life, to die on the cross for our sins, to be buried and to raise again so that all who would trust in Him could have the fog of vanity pierced through the light of the gospel of Jesus Christ, to know that even though we live under the sun and I don't have all my questions answered, there is a day that I am going in the sweet by and by where I will be with my God forever, and the vanity of this life will be no more. See, it's the vanity, the meaningless, the vapor. It's like a dense fog that's covering this world. You've seen it. You've experienced it. Earlier this week, as foggy as Chatham County can get, I drove out of my house, my driveway, to my road, heading towards 64. And it was so foggy, I could not see Highway 64. And yet, through the fog, I knew it was there. And when the fog of vanity engulfs your life and you've got unanswered questions, your world is upside down and your life seems confusing, and you want to ask the question, what is the use and what is the point? And even though the hope of Christ you may not see, well, if you see it, it's not always hope. But you see the light of the gospel, the light of a new body, the light of eternal life through Jesus Christ piercing through the fog of vanity of this life. Not fully making it disappear, but you know it's there. And one day, as we draw closer to the last day, the fog of vanity that we must live under will lift. It will lift to glory forever, where there'll be no more vanity, there'll be no more futility. But we will be with our God. So faith, living by faith, trusting God in a vain-filled world. Faith makes us see the prickles in every rose and the thorns in every crown. And so we say along with the preacher, it's all vanity. But we also say along with the Apostle John, the world is passing away with its desires, but whoever does the will of God our Father abides forever. So how do we live this life full of vanity before the face of God? Where do we find consolation and joy? How do we live life to the fullest in the midst of this short life at which the end we will surely die? we remember that the bondage of futility is in the hand of a sovereign God. God reached down himself and subjected it. He subjected under the sun futility in hope. And why did God make everything under the sun vanity? That's the question. Why did God make everything under the sun vanity? So that we would start looking for the one who's not under the sun. We look to the one who controls the sun. We look to the one that causes the rivers to rise and the rivers to sink. We look to the one who tells the wind where to blow. We look to the one who subjected this life to futility. We look to the one who knows when we will take our last breath and be free from the vanity of this life. And so we trust him in the midst of it all. So what then? Do we give up? Do we indulge? It's the opposite. It provides us the needed perspective that this world is not my home. My hope, my joy, my satisfaction, my consolation is not in anything under the sun, but it's in the one who knows it all. So who are you living for? That's the question. Are you living for life under the sun? Or are you living for the glory of God? That's how you make this one life you have count for something. And Jesus Christ came. And he came into this world, as John 10:10 says, to give you life that you may have it abundantly. You can live this short life to the fullest with joy and with hope. But you can only do that in the midst of vanity by looking with eyes of faith to Jesus Christ and surrendering the whole of your life to him. Because everything is never enough. But Jesus is. And if you live your life for him, it will not be in vain. So Ecclesiastes is going to teach us not to run. Not to run from the vanity. But to embrace it. To embrace the vanity and live a life well lived before the face of God by faith in Jesus Christ. To experience the freedom, joy, and glory and abundant life that only God offers. And as we live life, we must live it under the sun. And it is full of vanity. But the book of Ecclesiastes is going to teach us how to live life under the sun to the fullest and to the glory of God.
Thank you for listening to sermon audio from Grace Hill Church. Please feel free to make copies of this message to give to others, but please do not charge for those copies or alter the content in any way without written permission.